Did you get up early yesterday morning to see the Socceroos? I did. Two responses. We were dreadful, dreadful. And the Germans were wonderful. They played a fluid, thrilling brand of football that you just hope one day we can match. Right, no more about that. If you're like me, you'll be doing a lot of this, getting up early, staying up late over the next month to catch as many games as you can. Soccer or football, whatever you want to call it, is much more than a game. It says a lot about a country's history, about colonial history, migration, integration, and multiculturalism, globalization too, these days. Just look at our own history. Football has gone from being dismissed as wogball by some to a widely supported national game. With me now to talk about its role in society are Pino Migliorino, who chairs the Ethnic Communities Council of Australia, Dr. Francesco Riccata, who's the Casamarca Lecturer in Italian at the University of the Sunshine Coast, and from SBS, South Australian-born journalist and newsreader Anton Enos. You might have seen Anton's recent Insight special on soccer in Australia. Welcome all of you to Life Matters.
Hi. Thanks
very much.
Thank you.
Pino, I want to start with you. You grew up in Australia in the 60s and 70s.
Yes.
After coming from Italy as a four-year-old.
That's right, yes.
Did you play soccer when you were young?
No, I played rugby league.
Right. And was that a deliberate decision?
It was a decision predicated on the fact that I came to join my mother's family and all my uncles were playing rugby league for the local area. So it was seen as a thing to do because there was no soccer in that hole in the West area at that time.
Right. I suppose, though, it helped to fit in a bit, didn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it was seen as a passport into a more integrated approach. You got to know the local kids. You were seen to be like one of the others. And, it was really interesting. Rugby league was the game.
And how was soccer regarded at the time?
Well, in your introduction, you identified it as wogball. It was the stuff that kids did who were really outside of the mainstream. And what was really interesting, and over a short period then, the movement away from kids playing rugby league to kids playing soccer was quite extraordinary. And I think that's been really interesting.
I think it has too. Mm. What about your own children? What do they do or what do they do?
My own children, my girls played netball, but my son, he was 4 year old, as a 4 year old started playing soccer. Mm. By 14, 15, he had moved over to playing rugby. And really interesting in terms of that as well. There's a real feeling that our elitism in soccer is such that it's actually quite divisive amongst kids, whereas rugby was seen as something which is a lot more collegial. Mm. So unless you're a star in soccer, it's pretty lonely down in the lower ranks.
Francesco, Australia is obviously, we're a country of migrants. France and Italy, they're former colonial powers. And in a way that we're not, we have been a colonial power in Papua New Guinea, I think. But is that reflected in modern football in those countries?
Certainly is. Probably much more in France, because France accepts more its colonial past.
Yes, it had a much bigger number of colonies,
yes,
didn't it?
Yes. The colonial enterprise of Italy was quite short. It lasted a few decades, and Italy actually only became an empire in 1935, and just a few years before Second World War. So it has been much easier for Italians to completely remove,
yes,
from their memory.
In fact, it's because historically Italy wasn't very good at running an empire. It wasn't very successful at trying to be a colonial power, whereas France was for a long time. And so you have these French legacies in places like South America and the Caribbean, but predominantly in Africa.
Yes, and you can still see that with the waves of migration towards France from former colonies. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, has a huge impact also on soccer. While in Italy, you have wave of migration from those countries, but the phenomenon is much less visible.
Yeah. Well, Anton Enos, if I could bring you in, all eyes on South Africa now, and soccer has quite a history there too, and it's very much tied to the history of apartheid, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, there was a time, I remember growing up in South Africa, where soccer was regarded as the black sport, whereas rugby and cricket were the white sport. So it was kind of, you know, it was marginalized in that respect. But I think there was never any doubt that soccer was the most popular sport in the country, just didn't have the resources, didn't have the kind of profile. And I think that was largely for political reasons. You know, I mean, as with everything else in South Africa in those days, it was, you know, highly politicized. But, you know, as we see today with the World Cup now in full swing, the spirit there is just amazing. And there really is a sense of the country embracing the sport. And even people who, you know, until this moment had never been soccer fans are really kind of getting into the spirit of things.
Yes, it's interesting that. I just want to go back, though, to, I think you said, you know, soccer was the game of the black population. But in the 50s, I think FIFA decided to recognise the white soccer organisation as the South African Federation. And so South Africa's soccer team was all white.
You know, that was the history of sport in South Africa. Mm. You know, the many international organisations, countries, recognised the whites-only sport. We saw that certainly in cricket. We saw that in rugby. Until, you know, international pressure got to such a level that it was just untenable. So certainly, yeah, you know, there was, the national team would certainly have been all white, and it would have been unthinkable to have had either blacks or a mixed team representing South Africa under apartheid. I mean, that would have gone against everything that apartheid stood for.
So what happened when apartheid finally ended? What happened to soccer?
Well, I think the first thing that happened, one should take a step backwards and say that rugby, of course, was the high-profile sport, and immediately after the fall of apartheid, after the 1994, the democratic elections, that South Africa hosted the World Cup for rugby in 1995.
And I remember it very well.
And there was this incredible wave of nation building and this incredible sense of, you know, pulling together as a nation. And, you know, Nelson Mandela, of course, was at the heart of that. He actively supported the initiative. And there was a great sense of, you know, 48 million people all standing together. And from what I can gather, you know, exactly that kind of spirit has been regained and sort of re-nurtured for the 2010 World Cup. And I think it's just absolutely fantastic to see.
Yeah. So even the hardliners, the people who 10 or 15 years ago would have been wanting to sing Die Stem, I think it's called.
That's right.
Are they now embracing soccer?
I think there is a hardcore of, you know, the racist demographic. I mean, you know, you see that everywhere. We see that in this country as well. But I think generally speaking, there is a sense that people all have to share the country and they have to live together. And it's no point in hankering after the past, you know, that the old days of white privilege are over. You know, I mean, I think there are still some enormous political challenges that the country is facing. And there's some real redistribution of wealth issues that have to be addressed. But in a general sense, I think there is, even within the conservative side of politics, there is a sense that, you know, you've got to embrace the inevitable.
On Life Matters today, we're talking about, I suppose, the enormous position that football or soccer has in telling a story about a country and in telling a story about all of us and different attitudes. And with me is Antoninus. He's he's from SBS. He's South African-born broadcaster, and with me in the studio is Pino Migliorina from the Ethnic Communities Council and Dr. Francesco Riccati from the University of the Sunshine Coast. Francesco, your focus is on football in Italy and France. How much has the colonial history in Africa played out in modern football in those countries?
Oh, very much so. I can make a couple of examples. In France in 1998, when France won the World Cup, they hosted and won the World Cup. There was a lot of rhetoric about, you know, the team demonstrating the possibility of a multi-ethnic France to actually triumph. But beside that, there were a lot of problems, a lot of unresolved problems.
Yes.
For instance, just 1 year before, there was a big operation called Vigi Pirate, where essentially, police had to check all potential terrorists, and usually police will stop people from Muslim or black or Arab appearance. So you see the contradiction there, with politicians and media on one side celebrating this France au pluriel, this multi-ethnic French, and on the other side, the old stereotypes actually governing.
And you saw that a bit. I mean, one of the world's best ever players, Zinedine Zidane, French-born, of Algerian parentage. He spoke out against racism as the captain of the French team just before the last World Cup, actually, along with the Italian captain, that wonderful tigerish defender, Fabio Cannavaro. It's clearly an issue, isn't it?
I think it is an issue, and the football organization has been trying to fight racism as much as possible. But they always come back somehow.
Yeah, and it's not just... There are issues of racism in Spain, in Italy as well. I mean, in Italy, there's a young player called Mario Balotelli, Super Mario, he's yes. called. His parents, Ghanaian, he's had a bit of a rough reception, hasn't he?
Yes, I think he's a very strong, very talented player, but he has had a lot of problems. For instance, just last year, he was in Rome, and people just throw bananas at him. Mm. And just a few months earlier, in many stadiums, they sang against him stuff like shit nigger or Italian niggers don't exist.
Yes, yes.
And interestingly enough, many commentators, including the manager of the Italian national team, said that that wasn't racism, that that was just, you know, hostility towards a player from another team, but there wasn't anything racist about that.
And it's the same, well, there have been issues in Spain too. Samuel Eto'o, who's a Cameroonian player, I think, and had a long career in Spain before going to Inter Milan fairly recently. He had a time in Spain where the opposition fans, every time he got the ball, they made monkey noises. So it's extremely confronting. Pino, it's hard to imagine that kind of overt racism happening here now.
Mm, absolutely. If we were to be like that, we wouldn't actually have an Australian team because the bulk of the team is made up of people from different ethnic and cultural heritages.
Yeah. Although ethnic tensions do flare up from time to time, even since the clubs were de-ethnicised.
Yes. Yes, yeah, so that de-ethnicisation is a really interesting phenomena. And it's good and bad to some extent. Mm. The good aspect of it is that it actually created far greater opportunities for players who felt that they themselves, as kids growing up, that they needed to be of a certain ethnic group to play for a certain club.
Mm.
And that was replicated and maintained by the power structures in that community. The bad aspect was, to some extent, that it denied what had come before, and that is the foundation role that ethnic communities had in the development of soccer in Australia.
The tensions that I've seen, and certainly the ones that have been in the news, haven't been between, say, ethnic group A and wider Australia. They've been between ethnic group A and ethnic group B, who have old enmities,
yes.
who have disagreements that go back perhaps hundreds of years.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and the Balkan issues are always there, or the Greek Macedonian or Greek Turkish or Serbian versus Croatian. It's really interesting how that plays out because the interpretation around the ethnic communities themselves is that it's the kids who are doing it. It's not the old enmities, if you like. And what it is groupings of young people defining themselves
yes.
as different and acting that out in terms of a soccer environment, in terms of a competition. But their parents certainly don't condone it. And nor are their parents actually participating in it. And I think it's a really interesting phenomena where our third generation, not even our second, but even our third generation, are identifying in an ethnic way, and it's played out in sports. The same thing happened in the Australian tennis.
Mm, yeah, that's right. Anton, you recently hosted a discussion on the future of football here. What do you think of all this?
It's difficult to understand where all of this comes from. You know, I mean, as Pino was saying, some of those older enmities have nothing to do with football at all. I mean, we know the clashes between Bonnie Rigg and Sydney United, for instance, there's an old Serb-Croat divide. That had nothing to do with football. And, in the 21st century, it's hard to understand why people can allow that kind of tribalism to kind of interfere with something as wonderful and as healthy as sport. I know in South Africa, of course, it was, as I said before, everything is highly politicized there. So one can understand that there's a bit of a racial hangover from the old days. And, you know, 16 years is not that long since the fall of apartheid. So there's still some issues hanging around there. But there's a genuine sense, though, to kind of move towards a non-racial approach. So there's really no excuse for a country as modern and sophisticated as us to be, you know, succumbing to those kinds of old-style racism.
Pino Migliorino, you work in Sydney's Italian Heart, and there will be a lot of people watching the World Cup on big screens in Leichhardt.
Absolutely.
They won't necessarily be screaming and shouting for the Socceroos.
They won't. And they'll be kids. Their average age will be 15, 16. They'll be allowed out to quite late because this is an environment where they're going to be protected by big numbers. Their parents will condone it and actually support it because it's about supporting something which is important to them, which is like Italy. It's just a really interesting thing. And I remember that a lot of my thoughts are around the last World Cup. We've got a balcony in Norton Street, which overlooks Norton Street. Mm. And so over our balcony, there were 20,000 people in that street from Parramatta Road to Marion Street. Chock-a-block.
I recall in that World Cup, and I know it, there tended to be, there was a bit of ill feeling in that last game, but I think you could have gone down there with a France shirt on and you would have copped a bit of good-natured winding up.
Yes.
But there would have been no violence.
No violence at all.
It was more a celebration of football.
And in fact, during the World Cup was really interesting as well because one of the first games, the police were totally unprepared. And so after Italy actually won a game, all the kids converged to Norton Street.
Mm.
And basically, it ended up with a couple of fights and a couple of arrests. And then I had to do some interviews afterwards and people said, well, what do you think? I said, well, the difference between this crowd and a bigger crowd is the lack of alcohol. If these kids had any substance, it was an oversupply of caffeine in terms of coffee. And because it didn't have that alcohol content, the major conflict wasn't amongst themselves, but between themselves and the police, on the basis that the police hadn't prepared for that street to be taken over.
It's a global game, Francesco. National teams are drawn from many backgrounds now. You've already talked about that. Our best Australian players will go overseas. We'll always be a feeder league, no matter how good we get here, I think. What does that say about national identity, do you think?
Personally, I love to see, you know, big European team made of players from many different countries.
Me too, yeah.
Yes, but there is still a lot of discussion about that. Like in Italy, when Italy lose in World Cup or European Cup, there is always people complaining that we should, you know, promote Italian players and our national championship should be made of Italian players. And obviously that's not possible anymore. But for me, it's a very positive sign.
All right. Well, I'm going to wrap this up and I'm going to ask the same question of all of you. Anton, you first. Who's your pick this time around for the World Cup?
Well, I'm a Socceroos supporter, so obviously I want them to do well, and I think they can go through to the knockout stage. But, you know, failing that, obviously, you know, the host nation has to do well. My heart is there as well.
Mm.
So, you know, those are my two picks. South Africa's just done so fantastically well to get to this stage, and it would be, you know, just really the kind of fairy tale icing on the cake if they got through to the next round and got to that kind of sudden death situation.
All right, so Anton has two teams. Pino, how many do you have?
Oh, I've got five, but I am going to go for two. I'd love to see an Australia-Italy final with Australia winning on penalties. I think that would just be poetic.
And what about you, Francesco?
Well, I support Italy a little bit, of course, but I hope in a more interesting final, perhaps with Argentina. I love Argentinian players and Maradona, of course, is the history of football. So I think I will support Argentina.
Well, I will be cheering for the Socceroos above all. But if I my second team, for what it's worth, is Spain, who are playing wonderful football and perhaps now have the belief that they can do it for the first time. And I have some sympathy, too, for the Netherlands because they have played some wonderful football in the past and never got there. Mm-hmm. So I think all of us will be popping our eyes open with toothpicks to stick with this. Thank you, all of you, for joining me today.
Thank you very much.
Pino Migliorino, who chairs the Ethnic Communities Council of Australia, Dr. Francesco Riccati, who's the Casamarca Lecturer in Italian at the University of the Sunshine Coast, and from SBS newsreader and journalist Anton Enos, who, of course, is from South Africa. And if you're a Socceroos fan, courage, mon brave. All we have to do is win the next two games. It can be done.